Good morning and welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubichek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown. Well, the school bell has rung, summoning our children to another year of learning. But many of our kids in many schools don't see the beginning of the school year as signaling in the wonders of wisdom, but instead, torturous time spent with, well, things gone wrong. Intolerant teachers, bullies, and more. Schools can sometimes resemble asylums rather than sanctuaries for thought. So it's easy to understand why some kids love to hate school, hence today's theme. And we're not talking about changing anything this morning, but we are going to learn once again that hating school means little in the end, at least for most. In short, our children can be successful, even when in the clutches of bad school experiences. And today we're going to hear a couple of stories from an excellent case in point, a very dear friend of mine, someone who's become a success despite hating school. Houston actor and retired educator Phil Fisher was and still is, in my judgment, the consummate teacher. He taught at HCC UHD, directed an award-winning debate program at Rice, and made an indelible impression on the fine program in speech and drama at San Jacinto College. 44 roles over 12 seasons at the Alley demonstrates Phil's range, to put it mildly, and his work at Tutz, Stages Repertory Theater, and other venues still resonate with those fortunate enough to have seen his work. Phil, you're a success, and you hated school. And after doing some research, I found out that others hated school and became successes too. Losers, you know, like Steven Spielberg and Albert Einstein, Leonard Bernstein, Jimmy Carter, and that's the incredible short list. And Phil, first of all, tell us why you hated school.
Well, thanks, Hank, and good morning to you, and good morning to all of you who are listening. And I know I'm not necessarily in that company that you use as an example, but I appreciate it very, very much. Anyway, I want you to know that I've never shared with my family or friends this personal story, which has been folded up inside me for so many years. And I appreciate the opportunity to unfold that story of how I went from hating school to loving teaching. When I was born in Worcester, Massachusetts, September of 1940, my mother was not well enough to take care of me. My sister, she was about to be 9, and my brother, who turned 6 in June, went to live separately with grandparents. Foster parents took care of me. Well, it took a few years for my mom to develop enough strength for our family to be reunited. And kindergarten was going to take her away from me 6 to 7 hours a day. So I went kicking and screaming and yelling, crying at the top of my lungs. I hated school for that, for taking me away from my mother again. And I let the powers that be know that I hated school. No one could calm me down. So my older brother had to be taken out of sixth grade and take me home. And you know what? I just realized, putting the story together, that I never asked him how he felt about that. All I got from the teachers was homework, which kept me away from the newly developed wonder of television. If I didn't get my homework done, forget about watching Howdy Doody and Tom Mix or Hopalong Cassidy. So more reasons to hate school. Well, I got to junior high. Somehow I got through the elementary. And what do they do in junior high? They put me in woodworking class. Now, by the age of 12, I saw myself as a poet, as an actor. And I was not about to saw myself in half or anybody else. You know,
right.
School officials insisted, yeah. They insisted that I stay in woodworking. So my folks, quote unquote, rescued me by putting me in another junior high. The teachers did not appreciate my writing poetry instead of doing in-class assignments. So, I got to write poems in the vice principal's office. Well, thank heaven that my mother's mother was told by a doctor that a warmer climate is what she needed health-wise. So those two ladies decided that it would be nice to have a man around the house, and I qualified. because I was just bar mitzvahed. So when I got back to Massachusetts after being in Florida and finishing eighth grade there, a decision was made to continue with a private school. Now, since my brother had done so well at Williston Academy in East Hampton, Massachusetts, why not go to the ninth grade there? Well, I'll tell you why. Because administrators at Williston tested me and decided that I could go to Williston, okay, but if I was willing to repeat the eighth grade. I don't remember being willing to repeat the eighth grade, but my parents were willing. And so I ended up repeating the eighth grade at Williston Junior School. So I ended up moping around the campus. I hated school even more since I was held back a year. And then an insensitive headmaster, a son of a Batchelor.
Gotcha.
His name is Batchelor. Mm-hmm. So he's a son of a Batchelor. And anyway, he decided he'd give me a nickname of Gloomy Gus. Well, anyway, everybody in the school would call me Gloomy Gus, and my classmates haunted me with that. So I still hated school. But during the summer, before ninth grade, my mom took me to a colony in Chautauqua, New York, and I studied poetry with a very well-known poet at the time, Robert Francis, and he suggested I publish a pamphlet of 21 poems, written between the age of 8 and 14. So we did, and after a newspaper article in Worcester, Mass., gave me a little press, I sold 2,000 copies of my 21 poems for $1 apiece. Anyway, by now, in my schooling career, I had a whole bunch of reasons for hating school. I was called names by classmates. I was a year behind age-wise. School kept me from having fun in life. And little did anyone know that all I needed was one more solid reason for hating school, and I would find within me the idiotic courage to run away. Yeah, blindly, impulsively run away from school in East Hampton, Massachusetts. And then Andy Solomon came into my life. He was my roommate, and he was a brazen son of a psychiatrist. So he started to analyze my gloominess, why I might be writing poetry. And I got desperate motivation to run away. So I stole a bike from a kid who had not given me back a dictionary of mine, and I went up a big mountain from East Hampton to Springfield, Massachusetts. And I got down to Springfield. I sold my bike. I got money for a bus trip to New York City and some food. Well, anyway, my mom came to New York City. She picked me up. And in spite of that, the therapists and the administrators, I ended up quitting school after going to various other public schools. But eventually, after 2.5 years, I renewed my love from school. And where did that love come from? I want to tell you, it did not come from the teachers or administrators. It did not come from my expensive therapist, even though those people helped. And the love didn't even come from me for school at first. It came from my friends. It came from my classmates who knew in youth groups and parties around town that I belonged in school with them. So it wasn't long before my love of school and learning finally came from me, from my heart, from my soul, and it stayed with me for 40 years. Now, Dr. Gerald Jampolsky wrote Love is Letting Go of Fear, and he said, we teach what we want to learn. Well, in my case, those words couldn't be more well taken.
Thank you, Phil. You know, you talk about the fact that you love poetry, and you know, when I was in school in kindergarten, I started a year younger than most, and I peed in my pants the first day. That was a lot of fun. That's how I started school. Yes, and I had a poem too. It went, you know, you're an idiot, don't you see? And that's the reason you made me pee, and that's the reason I really hated school at the very outset. Yes, and you talk about woodworking in junior high. Olga Hopper, who I swear had to work for the Nazi party, called my mother and said, your son is not school material. Let's put him in shop, like you were in woodworking. So I took shop, you know, and I was exposed to tools for the first time, and I was given a wrench. And, you know, of course, to me, a wrench is a place where you raise cattle. I had no idea what to do with that at all. Yeah, school was interesting. I got to tell you. Okay, you're listening to Storytime, having a lot of fun, as I hope we are. And why we love to hate school with storyteller Phil Fisher on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek. Phil, you know, just in a couple of minutes, kids hate different things about school than you and I hated. And by the way, those of you who are listening who are young, yes, you heard it right. Phil did go to school last century, and so did I, and so did many. So just relax, and we'll be fine. We're not dinosaurs. But tell us a little bit, if you could, Phil, you know, as a teacher, as a really good teacher, give our, if there are any people out there, I hate school group, a way to cope with the school year if they really hate it, and maybe a few words to our children who like school. And we just have about a minute and a half on this, Bill, but what do you think?
Okay, gotcha. Let's give a list here. Number one, find at least one thing or person to like or love. A teacher, a friend, a club, a sport, and you might find that it's worth taking the bitter in order to ultimately enjoy the better.
Very good.
That's number one.
Okay. Take the bitter in order to find the better.
Yeah.
Good.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
So, and then we can also make hate and anger work for us. And so those are very two powerful emotions. And usually hate and anger are a cover, a front for something we're afraid of. So we got to ask ourselves, what are we afraid of? What are we afraid of with this school or anything else in life?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
And we can make a list in our lives, you know, just what are you afraid of? What am I afraid of? And make a list and see if it connects to maybe some of the things why you hate school. And then if we look at fear, F-E-A-R, mm-hmm. is an acronym.
Mm-hmm. Which you love. You love acronyms. You love acronyms.
Yeah.
You're an acronym guy.
A memory device.
That's all right. I know. You love alphabet soup. You always have. And I'm sure that was the initiative.
Yeah. You got that right.
Right.
So F is face it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, face the fear we have. And then E, embrace it. And A, acknowledge it. And then R, maybe we can reverse it. And so we got to remember that fear is not the absence. Let's see what Mark Twain said. Something about courage is not the absence of fear. It's the mastery of fear.
Yeah.
So we never get over our fears, even some addictions. We never get over them. But the wisdom is that we can get mastery over those fears and over those addictions. And then...
And now we just have about 20 seconds,
okay.
You know, because I wanted to just kind of move on to something else. But in about 20 seconds, 30 seconds, what would you tell those people who love school? I mean, who really like it? I mean, give them an encouraging remark.
Spread the word.
Spread the word.
Yeah.
Okay, spread the word. That's good.
Be proud of it.
Don't talk about it. Talk about the good things.
Yeah.
Talk about them. Don't keep them to yourself.
Yeah, right.
Don't be passive.
Yeah.
Don't be benign.
Yeah,
you know, it's okay to share good things.
And be surprised how much others have in common with you.
We're going to get back to this Andy Solomon character, by the way, in just
sure.
a moment. But before we do, we're going to go ahead and break to Laura, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the traffic.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston. The time is 9:44, and here is a quick update on traffic and weather. There is a two-vehicle accident on I-10 Katy Freeway eastbound at Willcrest. Three frontage road lanes are affected. Current temperature is 86 degrees, but it feels like 92. Skies are clear. Humidity is 56%. Today will be mostly sunny with a 20% chance of rain in the afternoon. There's a heat advisory in effect until 7 p.m. Sunday. Today's high will be around 101 degrees and low 76 degrees tonight. Please stay tuned after today's Community Spotlight for the 420 Drug War News with Dean Becker, followed by Undercurrents with Greg McVicker at 10 o'clock, and then Wide Open Spaces with Rourke at 11 o'clock. And now back to story time with Dr. Hank Rubicek and his guest Phil Fisher.
92 degrees. It's so predictable. It's so refreshing, 92 degrees. The weather in this city is so predictable. It's like saying tonight it'll be dark. It'll be dark all night until morning, and there's a good chance it'll be repeated tomorrow. Phil, you had mentioned this young man named Andy Solomon. You know, all of us have some kind of a nemesis in our life, and, you know, I remember how funny it is when I think about people who really upset me in my life. I had the Orrin Youngsteins of the world and Jerry Savers who just aggravated me by virtue of the fact that they existed. And you told me before the show that you ran into this guy again. But first of all, tell us a little bit about Andy and about why he was really kind of a promoter, if you will, about hating school and how you ran into him.
Yeah, well, I tell you, if Andy's by some crazy coincidence is listening this morning, please wait till the end. before you judge me on what I'm going to say about us, because to this day I feel confident that my roommate at Williston Academy in 1955 never had a clue about the hurtful impact that he had on me at our tender ages of 15 and 16. And my wife and I visited Williston Academy 2 years ago, and it's still one of the finest private schools, college preparatory schools, and it's now co-ed. It's called the Williston Northampton School. But Andy and I, when it was all male, we parted ways in the fall of 1955. So how many years ago was that? So anyway.
A lot.
Yeah. So I was about to begin a four-year romance back in my hometown of Worcester, Massachusetts. And the teenager I loved, and I like to believe loved me, happened to have the same name as Andy's sister, Linda Solomon. So after 4 years of going steady, Linda and I were on again, off again, and she told me that she dated Andy Solomon.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, imagining Linda, whom I love so much, in the arms of that son of a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
That was almost too much to bear. But at least Linda never ended up with Andy permanently. But in a way, I did. That is, I ended up with Andy in my life. And happily, in a positive way. I have even ended up with Linda in my life after she contacted me a couple of years ago to catch up on our lives.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And but since she found out I was married, she hasn't called back. So anyway, and happily married. Then again, I have seen Andy and his family, and I've been places with Andy, but not so much with Linda, who lives in two faraway places. So you see, I came to Houston in 1972, and once again performed at the Alley Theater Acting Company. So among my interests outside of the Alley Theater was the ability to attend Reform services at Congregation Beth Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So I attended as many Friday night services as possible for about 20 years, along with high holiday services. And like most worshipers in a temple or a church, I said and waved hello to hundreds of people. And we never really know their name, but we wave and we offer pleasant recognition to others who attend the same house of worship. Well, came a day I went to a variety show fundraiser at Beth Israel, and I recognized one of those hundreds of Friday night faces performing in the show. So I looked at the name in the program. I was flabbergasted. I mean, that's to say the least. And hopefully being a lot more grown up, mature, 25 years later from 1955, and civil-minded, I was really thrilled with seeing the name of Andy Solomon. I had been saying hello to Andy Solomon, waving to him for 10 years. Without even knowing that's my roommate. And there I was about to approach him after the show. I must have been around 42 years of age, say in 1982. And I came to the realization that I've been saying Good Sabbath to Andy from 1955. And I called him the analyzer. Mm-hmm. I mean the analyzer. Ooh, I got to pronounce that word carefully. Anyway, but both of that moment, we had a stunned recognition. And we felt a truly sweet fondness toward each other.
That
was weird.
Yeah. Wow.
And then we've been caring friends for 29 years ever since.
Really? So this is a person who was very instrumental, really, in you hating school, and now, you know, has he apologized? Have we apologized to you?
Yeah.
Does he feel I'm sorry for ruining your life or anything like that? Or impartially ruining your life?
He said,
done that?
Yeah. He said, if I did that, I'm sorry.
If I did that. Yeah. He didn't know that at the time?
He doesn't have the same memory that I do.
I see. Yeah, right. It's interesting how you can lose your memory so quickly. Yeah, we blame it on age. Sometimes we blame it on, gee, you know what? Maybe I just kind of want to forget that.
Yeah, but I want to tell you, he owned a great store, United Jewelry and Distributing, and it still exists in a smaller venue right now. And I had shopped in that place, and I had gone to Beth Israel, and I said hello to Andy Solomon, and I didn't know it. And he's become a wonderful photographer, and we talk about that, and he sends me pictures now and then on the internet.
So you dated, now who did you date again? His sister?
He thought that when I said I dated Linda Solomon, he said, no, you didn't, that's my sister.
Yeah,
I wouldn't date my own sister. I said, of course not, So, but her name happened to be, coincidentally, Linda Solomon.
Wow.
And now I got to get back to him because I told him recently it's a different Linda Solomon. So he got to find out. He got to get back to me. Let me know.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I always dated the girls who couldn't get a date. You know, that was my stock and trade. I dated them. You know, we talk about hating school, Phil, and I really appreciate these stories so much. And it reminds me of something that Dr. Martin Luther King said. He said that don't hate. It's too big a burden to bear. Actually, his father said that to him. His father said to him, you know, don't hate, it's too big a burden to bear. And the late Dr. Martin Luther King used that in several of his speeches. And I think that what you were saying earlier, that wonderful acronym, you know, facing, engaging, or embracing, achieving, you know, that reminded me of that, because I think that we do have to really conquer fear, not just in school, obviously, but in so many different areas. You are listening to stories about kids who actually just hated school and became tremendous successes, thanks to Phil Fisher on KPFT Storytime on Open Journal, and I'm your host, Hank Rubicek. Listen, I wanted to talk a little bit about how we can all learn stories a little bit better and a little bit more if I could. I am the proud president of the Houston Storytellers Guild here in Houston. It's a marvelous organization, and I want to invite everyone out there to tell your stories, because you've got many to tell. And there's no better place to tell, listen, and learn about storytelling than at the Houston Storytellers Guild Swap meeting, held the third Thursday of every month at 6:30 in the evening at Brazos Bookstore at 2421 Bissonnette, which I think is the greatest venue in town for storytelling. I truly do. And you also please want to check out our website at HoustonStorytellers.org for all sorts of fun happenings, like a workshop centering around Chitra Banerjee's Devakaruni's One Amazing Thing, which will be held August 27th at the Central Branch of the Library at 5 o'clock at 500 McKinney. I think it's in the late morning, and I apologize, but check out the site if you want to, because one of the tellers, Jay Staley, is going to be my guest on September 23rd, and it's going to be a marvelous thing. We've got a lot of great happenings, and I sure would appreciate it if all of you can check out our website, because it's a real comprehensive one. It'll tell you exactly what's happening. Please. You know, Phil, we just have a couple minutes left. Actually, not even that long. But, you know, I don't know about you, but I loved school supplies. Let's just change the beat a moment. I love school supplies. I love the little compass that you would put on the page and you would turn. It would be a lethal weapon now.
Yeah.
Right? You can't do it. You couldn't walk in. You'd be under arrest. You'd be in jail for 20 years.
Right.
But what was your favorite school supply?
Well, right off the bat, an eraser.
An eraser?
Yeah. It was a symbol of getting rid of mistakes.
And you thought that when you were a child? You thought, I love my eraser because it's a symbol?
Well,
it's a nice color, it'll fit in my little zip bag?
I looked over that stuff too, but I loved a pencil sharpener, and I always had a pencil and eraser, and I'd write. Even back then, I had no idea that it was so important for actors to take notes in pencil on their scripts. And so the importance of a pencil, being able to erase that and not a pen, and have a little sharpener, those little sharpeners. And then, if I did make a mistake, hopefully I could erase it and people wouldn't realize that I had misspelled something, or that I had written down a wrong fact or something. Yeah, I was thinking that.
I like crayons. I think I mentioned to you earlier. I like crayons. You know, I was told you have to buy a box of 16, but I bought the box of 24 because I felt that pastels had a place in the world. And the teacher, of course, said, 24, you were told to buy 16. And I said, would you please get a life? I'm thinking to myself.
Yeah.
I want more color. So that's what teachers really worried about there. Look, I just want to make this quick comment to all the kids listening and parents. Don't hate school. You know, teachers work so hard. We have got to read books. We've got to learn to write. We've got to love the people around us. Mm-hmm. None of that really sounds profound, but with the new school year coming in, ring in good stuff. Phil, I've got to thank you so much for being here. I wanted to thank Phil, my very dear friend. You're still the consummate teacher. You're a great storyteller. You're a busy person, or maybe not. But in any event, you're here, and I love that, and I love seeing you. It's a shame we don't see each other outside of this more often, because it reminds me of how wonderful it is to be with you. But thank you, Phil, for reminding us that school isn't something to hate. but to embrace. And that success is always within reach. So, to everyone out there, have a great school year. And always remember, it is never too late to live happily ever after. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, wishing you a safe and story-filled weekend. Thank you.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit KPFT.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Undercurrents coming up at 10, followed by Wide Open Spaces at 11. And thank you for tuning in today to Open Journal here on 90.1 KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Peace.